For May 6th, 2024, it's the Overthinking It podcast, episode 827. Now I actually know multiple Croatians. Welcome to Overthinking It, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't deserve. The Overthinkers are your smart, funny friends from the internet. We are like an international festival coming in from every corner of the globe. Globes don't have corners. Every corner of the country. The country isn't square. It doesn't have corners. All over, okay? We're coming in from all over to a giant bacchanal, a celebration of all things overthinkable, all things overthought. We have smarter fun together. God, remember when, like, we tried to position our brand? Imagine that. Imagine the shame of that. Imagine the shame of trying to position your brand. That's a thing that I did before. So, position my brand right up my... Hey, I'm Matt Rather. I'm here with my good friends, Matt Belinky. Matt, it's a pleasure always to have you on the show.
I will position your brand any day.
Wow. Okay. Excellent. We got Pete Fenzel. Hey, Pete, how are you?
Hey there, partner. I'll brand your position.
Oh, wow. I usually pay extra for that, but okay. Mark Lee, what's up?
Hey, I think we've done a pretty good job of positioning our brand because we got a lot of subscribers to our YouTube channel, like way, way more than to this podcast. We're doing something right, guys. What is that thing that we're doing right?
I have nothing to do with it, but let me tell you, Overthinking It is like four siloed different things, right? Like, remember when we were a blog? We were a blog at one point.
Do you remember when there were blogs?
Yep. That's wow. Yeah. Well, I look out at a moonscape, you know, denuded of blogs, entirely flattened, leveled as far as the eye can see. I will remember blogs. Will blogs? Yeah. So we were like that, and that had a certain audience. We had the podcast that had a certain audience. That, for what it's worth, I think was probably the most engaged group that we had, like in the heyday of, like, 2011.
Past tense, Matt.
Yeah, wait.
We love everybody who's listening to it and is engaged. Join us on Discord.
Yes, the dozens of you who are still around, you're actually the good ones, and we're grateful for you every day, and we enjoy talking to you in the Discord. So hop on in there. Email me podcast@overthinking.com if you want an invite. But a while back, we started a YouTube channel, and you know, it was one of these things where it was so small that we figured we might as well just turn it over to Belinky and see what he could do with it, right? Because surely this thing would never amount to anything much. But Matt took it and turned it into an international powerhouse of media production. Matt, how on earth did you do that?
Look, honestly, looking back at the YouTube channel, I think it's more correct to say that, like, it started out as, like, a little bit of everything, sort of the way the podcast still is. But then there was one thing that seemed to actually work. Let me remind you that I think until last year, our most popular video ever was I Seen to Scene.
Right? Yeah, the Les Mis.
Yes! Didn't we only very recently manage to supplant I Seen to Scene, which was, like, a benchmark that we thought we would never achieve? We did, like, explainer videos. We did the thing about the superhero Venn diagram. We did a video, like, about the Gosha moment.
We're doing very insightful Taylor Swift music video analysis way before it was cool.
We had a lot of covers, kind of slightly parodic covers of Justin Bieber's Baby.
There were three, yes.
Right. It was like a series. And then, of course, there was the erotic Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I was convinced I was going to be like,
we don't talk about the erotic Looney Tunes cartoon.
You know, I was just glad that you were off the streets, Matt, when you were working on that one.
It kept me out of trouble for, like,
it kept me out of trouble.
It was my COVID project. It was a crazy year for everyone.
Yeah. Yep.
But in any case, there was one sort of content that actually seemed to stick on the YouTube channel, and that was videos about Eurovision. And when we first made videos about Eurovision, it was very important to explain in the videos what Eurovision was, because right. The whole idea is that, like, if you're American, you have no idea what this is, and we are going to – it was – the initial videos were, like, more like React style, right? So there's no – expectation that like we, the people watching the videos, were gonna actually know anything about them. It was like us literally like watching a song and just sort of like giving these takes for it as if it was this sort of like artifact that we had unearthed from the desert and we had no context for it.
Well, that's everything. I mean, interestingly enough, that is a real genre of like a whole genre of YouTube, of like a certain kind of like influencer YouTube, is that someone like stands in a green screen, right, and reads a blog just article live,
just cold.
Yeah, well, and, I mean, you know, and like stops, like, pauses, and just world, talks, right? About it. Yeah, yeah, like, absolutely.
Like, when a Eurovision song is released, there's like a ton of things where it's like, a Venetian reacts to this. You know, this. It's always like the nationality or like the city where they're from is like the selling point. It's like, oh, like I know what I think of this song, but do I know what a German thinks of the song? It's like, oh, maybe I'll find out.
Yeah, speaking for all Germans, we all think alike. We are highly regimented culture, but that like, I don't know, I think it is the kind of the lowest form of YouTube discourse, but the problem is the good ones are excellent, right? As with most things like this that are poorly imitated. Yeah, the good ones like are really interesting. Like, I'd, you know, if I could get Max Martin to react to a whole bunch of Eurodance, you know, kind of pop songs on a YouTube channel, I would be fascinated by that. I feel like if it turns out that he was able to articulate the things that he's talented about, as opposed to being more of a practitioner, if he were a decent explainer of his own art, that would be fantastic. But I also like, I don't need like a voice teacher in Skokie breaking down Idina Menzel singing Let It Go, you know, right? Like that's just not, I'm not sure that adds to the sum total of human knowledge in a way that is appreciable by anybody. But we didn't stay with that, Matt. Like most things on the internet, Overthinking It was there a decade or more before, and abandoned it because we found it creatively barren. What have we moved on to now?
We unfortunately we moved on to like actually trying to figure out what we're talking about, which is a lot more work. Okay, I totally understand why people in the Eurovision space love to do this is like a huge pet peeve of mine, that people in the Eurovision space, let's say there were five Eurovision songs that had come out, that people would upload a video that says my top five, and it would simply be like maybe a 10-second clip of each video in the order that you prefer them. And the great thing about that kind of content is you can just keep doing it every time the songs get released, up to 37 songs, and somehow for some reason tens of thousands of people will watch this just to find out how this one random person is ranking all 37 songs. And it is. I feel like that is the antithesis of the stuff that we are doing, which is like incredibly high effort, arguably low reward. But so we are really attempting to turn these songs inside out. And I think honestly, we turned the corner in a big way like 2 years ago when we established like a Discord that allowed us to directly connect with the people who are into this stuff. Because, you know, it is hard to imagine, but like as recently as like 2 years ago, we would make a video and it would simply be based on like things I had read online, things I was able to find out on Wikipedia, and anything else would just be sort of conjecture. Right, because like I did not have a way to contact anybody in Croatia and ask them what this song meant to them, or like if that was right. And now I do. Now I actually know multiple Croatians, and so that, for instance, Matt, when we do the rehearsal for the Croatia video, there are actually Croatians who will show up and talk you through pronouncing all the Croatian names.
Yeah, that is a thing that has, you know. So we still produce video content. Matt writes scripts, and then we rehearse them in a live chat on the Discord, where, yeah, exactly, where people from all over Europe come in and laugh at me because I don't know how to pronounce things. But you know, I don't know.
Apparently, we still don't know how to pronounce the famous Swedish band spelled ABBA, which I'm not going to attempt to mingle here.
It's always the things you think you know, right?
Oba?
Oba.
I literally don't know it, so it's not ABBA.
It's not ABBA.
ABBA?
No, not yeah. ABBA. Not like not, he- ABBA. Not like Hebrew for father. It's ABBA.
ABBA.
Ah. ABBA. Ah. ABBA. A la cat.
ABBA.
ABBA.
What?
ABBA. ABBA. A what? ABBA. No, not ABBA. ABBA. the yeah, it's I mean, I don't know. Like I like Temu Kastri. There were some really good, what was Vismenust? Who are they representing? Remind me again. Estonia, right?
Estonia.
Yeah. And so there were all these Estonian names. Matt wrote a paragraph that was just like 20 Estonian names in a row.
We didn't name the five members of the group.
Yeah, and they all
but
have like...
We didn't have to, but we chose to.
They all have like eight names because they have nicknames as well. So it was, it was pretty, it's pretty good. So that's, but that, I mean, like, so, okay, you've gotten an army of unpaid gig workers who do your bidding, but what has that like, I don't know, it functions as a sort of living ChatGPT where you can kind of gut check your assumptions or things like this, or do you feel like it's changed your mission in writing these, which, if it's not clear, Belinky writes all of these, you know, well, he writes the lion's share of them. Have they changed your mission at all?
Maybe a little bit. I think in the earlier days that we were doing this, it was, some of these were easy and fun to dunk on. It would be like this particular song feels silly or is like mistranslated in an obvious way, and there was low hanging fruit that we would sometimes grab. And I feel like having everyone in the Discord reminds me that like every song is somebody's favorite song. Right, mm-hmm. That like there's no song, even the songs that are like clearly going to come in last place, there are some people who feel like emotional about this song. They're like, this song speaks to them, and just the fact that it made it to Eurovision and people will hear it is like really exciting for them. And so I think more and more I've been trying to be like Mr. Rogersy about it. Mm-hmm. Not to say that like, you know, we don't have votes to pick, we don't have criticism, but just sort of like to talk about things that are like exciting and interesting and not look for snarky ways to find faults.
Yeah, it helps, by the way, that Russia is no longer in the competition because we had a dunking on them.
I remember
it was kind of fun to have them as like the evil empire, right?
It was. I remember the after they annexed the Crimean Peninsula, they sent a song to Eurovision that began, "Pray for peace and healing. I hope that we can start again."
It was straight trolling.
It was very, yeah. Well, I forget what it was called, like A Million Voices or something like that.
Yeah,
no, that was a different song. Was it?
Wait, was it? Oh,
I think that might have been the year before. Yeah.
What? Yeah. No, there was A Million Voices, and there was like the what if we all chose to bury our guns. Was either like right before they invaded or right after they invaded. And it was like a straight up, mm-hmm. It was almost like a Disney parody kind of thing. And you almost have to like respect the audacity, just the sheer, nobody trolls like Russia. They actually have paid internet trolls. I guess maybe we didn't realize that back then, right? That like, you know, they had like, you know, people who just their job it is to sort of like hack the internet. But it's like they've professionalized trolling maybe before the rest of us were onto it.
Russia isn't here anymore. So now like instead we can just marvel at, I don't know. A Lithuanian. No, where's that guy from? Windows 95 Man. Where is Windows 95 Man from?
Well, he's from Finland. So this is
he's Finnish. So, yes. A Finnish man. Who cavorts about the stage in jorts, and is just amazing, and like I guess what I'm asking you, Matt, is like, what about Eurovision itself, right? What has changed about the song contest? Like, is it has it still got its kitschiness? Is it getting too cool? Is it too polished? Are we still finding the weird and interesting stuff in there?
I feel like there are lanes, sort of the way that, like, you know, in politics and everything, that there are, like, you know, certain you get these certain candidates that sort of fit like a certain niche, right? So that, like, there's always going to be a certain amount of like radio friendly pop songs, right? And that's what won last year, right? Is that like it was the Swedish song from a woman named Loreen. Now I wanted to say Loren because like rather put it in my head, but it is Loreen.
It's an E sound that we don't have in English. It's like Lorraine or something something like that. But English, she has come out as saying that English speakers can say Loreen and that's okay with her.
You really are loath to admit that that's what you're supposed to say.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that, well, I think that that's how she pronounces it herself when speaking English, though she pronounces it with the Swedish E when speaking Swedish.
This is like, you're like the guy who's like a commentator for like a football, like ESPN football, and you really want to pronounce the football team Notre Dame. Even though, like, nobody else in the entire country does that.
I actually got...
That's how you should pronounce it. It's like, but that's not how anyone pronounces it.
I got well, actually, by that pretty hard in college by a guy named Harry Attridge, who used to be the dean of students of the college at Notre Dame. And he was like, well, actually, Matt, it's pronounced Notre Dame. yeah, anyway.
Five foot nothing, 100 nothing. You're going to play football for Notre Dame.
What were you about to say, Pete?
What was I about to say?
Yeah, you spoke.
I was going to make a joke about how, wait, when Russia did that song with the dude with the violin rolling around on top of the piano, were they just trolling us the entire time? Did I have the freedom to not take that seriously? Because I did not feel like I had that freedom at the time. I felt like people were saying,
are you talking about the guy with the ice skater? And there was the song that was it, this one won back in like, yeah, like 2007. Yep. So it was definitely like a memorable thing. So there was like one guy that was sort of like singing this sort of male pop ballad. And then they had, I think, Yevgeny Plyshenko, who was the reigning silver medalist from the Olympics. And they had like, they found a way to come up with like artificial ice that was good enough for him to like figure skate on stage. So he was actually doing figure skating like sow cows on the Eurovision stage around the guy singing, you know, like straight up doing like the.
But
there was
also a violinist playing an actual Stradivarius, right?
And that was the third component, is that there was a guy who had an actual Stradivarius, and he was like, I can't even imagine the insurance situation where it's like, not only do you want to like take a Stradivarius like out of the country on a plane, but then you're going to like have it on the artificial ice as a dude figure skates around you at like high speeds. But it worked out okay and it won, so I guess you can't argue with success.
So one of the dynamics that I love about the Eurovision coverage, and I'd also add the American Song Contest coverage, which we did. We were probably the most faithful witnesses. I would describe us as witnesses more than as fans.
Yeah. We paid more attention to the American Song Contest than the producers of the American Song Contest.
Right. I think we knew it wasn't going the distance, but like somebody had to be there to document it. We had to be like the scribe, so that like in the like years from now, like when people want to like do a, like a video, it's like, hey, did you know there was an American Song Contest back in the day? Like they're gonna find our stuff as like the only record that had existed.
Ask every man if he has heard the story.
So I helped much more. I get to pitch in on the Eurovision stuff sometimes, and I love being able to help. And Matt, I am sorry I've not been able to pitch in more this season with it. But it is a real joy. But the several of the angles on talking about these songs that I find interesting, and I'm curious how you would describe kind of the mission, whether it's something that's evolved, like, okay, we definitely want to do this kind of thing more. So there's obviously the ones where you're like, okay, this is funny, this is weird. Like, we're talking about something that's funny and weird or that you haven't heard about that's novel, right? And so, like, there's that hook to it where, like, hey, this is this thing that's happening, right? And Russia's trolling us or whatever. Then there's the dynamic of, here's a song that's from a particular place, and this place doesn't get talked about a lot in our circles. So let's use this as an opportunity to review some of the sort of history and culture of this place as we understand it, and make connections to the song. But the connections might be guesses, right? They might be, you know, they're not necessarily like proof. So like the American Song Contest, I felt like, was a good opportunity for this sort of thing, where it's like, okay, the guy from Idaho, you know, he sang a song that was very angsty, and it was a good opportunity to be like, did you realize the Boise, Idaho real estate market is like crazy right now? Like housing costs in Idaho are growing faster than they are anywhere else, right? And it's like, yeah, maybe that's what he's talking about. Maybe it isn't, but it's an opportunity to like learn about Idaho and like what's going on in Idaho. And I feel like there's that angle on it in the Eurovision coverage too, in terms of learning about other places in Europe. But I feel like, especially lately, you've been able to get so much deeper into the specific history of the countries in Eurovision and of the bands, as opposed to the approach of this is from the country, and the country sort of provides us a narrative hook for what we're going to talk about with this thing. But now it's like, no, it's like, it's either the history of the, it's either it's novel, weird, strange, hilarious, awesome, something you've never seen before, or it's like social studies class, you get to learn a little bit about the place that the song is from, or it's like band history, music history. This is what this band has been doing. Or it's like Eurovision history. How did this sort of Eurovision situation come to be, I guess? I mean, have you felt a difference between these sort of modalities of approaching this? Or does one strike you as more interesting than the others?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I think that as recently as like maybe even last year, there was sort of, I had a feeling that sort of for SEO purposes, for just sort of like purposes of people being able to discover the videos, they had to be like, at least a little bit comprehensive, right? And that all the videos, even as recently as last year, were just sort of like the name of the song, and it was just sort of like explanation and analysis, right? And so that because the assumption is that like we do have subscribers, but more people are going to find the video through search than our subscribers, right? And so that we want to make these videos something that you might search for because you're interested in a song, because like there's this song that's on the radio in your country and like you want to see a video about it, and then you find this thing and it says explanation analysis and you watch it and then maybe you become a subscriber. But this year I sort of, and I remember talking to Matt about this, is just sort of like, I just want to make them more video essays that have the freedom to only focus on one thing and don't feel like, well, we got to talk about the lyrics, we got to analyze the music, we have to like, you know, do a little background on the country, and it has to check all these boxes. And a good example was the first one of the year was France, and we didn't talk about the song at all. It was like a 12-minute video, and it was trying to address the question about like, why did France pick this guy? Because it was an internal selection by the broadcaster, meaning that like nobody voted for him. The broadcaster was just like, this is the guy this year, this is the song. And it was sort of like, so why this song and why this guy? And it was just sort of we didn't say anything about like the specific, like, here's how the music works, here's how the lyric works. It was more just about like, here's who this guy is, here's the problems that France has been having for Eurovision, here's why we think they might have wanted to make the selection this year. And there's a bunch of them that the Norway one barely talked about the song, and it was more just talking about folk music in general, and really went on a limb with a theory that like is much more Stokes's thing than mine about like why basically the folk music is sort of like based in ethnicity, right? It's based in like, you know, you have a subculture, and the music has come down through the centuries through the subculture, but that doesn't necessarily align within sort of a national identity, a national border, right? And that you can have a country that contains many different ethnicities, many different types of folk music. And so what is it that makes it so that some countries have this like very seem to be united around a certain style of folk? And why, you know, we ended up talking about American country music for a while, and you know, with a certain like obviously there are a lot of like weird caveats because there's like a lot of political elements. There's a lot of, you know, country music has drifted pretty far from like any sort of musical subgenre and any sort of like being, you know, its folk origins are pretty divorced from like what you hear on the radio. But the whole point is that like the Norway song wasn't, you know, the video didn't become about the Norway song. It became like, it's an opportunity to talk about something interesting and to sort of like start with the song, end with the song, but the middle can be like about country music and can be about like Morgan Wallen for 5 minutes and like why Americans like that guy and what that says about America.
Yeah. I mean, do Americans like that guy?
They seem to. I mean, I think he's outselling like Ed Sheeran for starters, although I know Ed Sheeran's not American. But it is like, I think we still have this variety where it's true. Like, we did this video on Luxembourg, and it wasn't that like Luxembourg had a great song. Like, their song is probably may not qualify out of the semifinals. But the interesting part is like, this is the first year in literally 30 years that they participated in Eurovision, and it was a great opportunity to talk about Luxembourg. It's like, what's the deal with Luxembourg? Where did it come from? Like, you know, what kind of a place is it? And we ended up talking a lot about Capitani, which is this Netflix show, which has kind of been a big international hit. You may have even been pushed it on your own personal Netflix watched next queue, and it was like, you know, Luxembourg's greatest cultural export is, you know, in decades. And you know, it does, you know, in some cases it's like the band is interesting, in some cases the song is interesting, in some cases the country is interesting. But yeah, the you know, the Greece one it ended up being a lot about tourism, right? And we actually like talked about like you know, some academic theories about tourism, like about what the tourist gaze is, you know, about the idea that like if a bunch of tourists are taking pictures of you in your city, it's like, does that change the way that you think about yourself? Does that change the way you think about your country? How do you present yourself in front of tourists? How do tourists present themselves in front of you? And all this stuff is very relevant to the song, but like the song becomes a great opportunity to talk about something outside the song. And I kind of think that's our brand. Like, there are a lot of Eurovision channels that just like really focus in on the song and like do like a line by line analysis of it. And I don't want to compete with those people because, look, there are people who like watch all the national selection shows and like, you know, listen to all these artists like year round and like, you know as soon as these people get selected, they know everything about them because like they're seriously into Estonian music and they were before this one band from Estonia got selected. And like, I don't think that's us. But I think what is, you know, different about us is like, you know, because honestly, that's the identity of this podcast, too, is that like we'll go all over the place and we'll zig and zag and we'll make connections between things that don't seem to be connected at first. And at least some people do seem to respond to that.
Yeah, the videos have been incredible, by the way, to watch.
Oh, thanks.
I've contributed just like a little bit here and there on the edges. But you guys are you and Matt are both putting on some pretty amazing work. Blanky, a question for you. For her, I think we've acknowledged this before, but to say it again, right? The YouTube channel audience and this podcast audience is a Venn diagram with a fairly small intersection. We are given to understand. So with that in mind, for those of us listening to the most of you who are listening to the podcast who haven't been paying too much attention to Eurovision, but might want to check out our YouTube channel and the finals broadcast this weekend, what should they do? Where should they start?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. What would you tell them, rather? Should they just go like watch the ones that are big hits, or should they?
This year, if you want to get a thing, I feel like Grease, the review we did this year of Grease really encapsulates Matt's creative project very well. It's like it's a good litmus test. Like, if you like this video and want more like this, you will enjoy the channel. And if you think this video is not for you, then the channel is not for you, because it really encapsulates the ethos with, an analysis of the singers. Marina Sati is her name, this year's entrant from Grease. Her previous career, including a song that she did called Matissa that is on my like playlist now, you know. I don't know the words. They're all it's all Greek to me. But that's good. And then goes a little bit into this tourist theory and the kind of the counter tourist theory as well, and contains a hilarious anecdote about the philosopher Martin Heidegger, and it's taken from late in his life. I don't know what he was doing earlier in his life, say in the 30s and the 40s, but I'm sure it was nothing shameful. So later in his life,
you say Russia's a troll.
But later in his life, I'm just going to tell this story about Martin Heidegger. He was a I don't even know what to call a person who like is devoted to Greece. He's a Greeceophile? A Hellenist?
I guess, yeah.
Sure, but like not just a student of the
oh, a hellophile.
Yeah, he's a hellophile, and that's
an Acropistan.
And really like antique Greek philosophy was extremely extremely sort of meaningful to him and all this stuff, and like had never been to Greece. And late in his life, he went to Greece, and he wrote beforehand in his journal about like what a profound experience it would be to, stand, for example, at the temple at Delphi and to just kind of experience the millennia of culture and,
You know what the story is, rather, that occurred to me? This is just an episode of Frasier. Right, just imagine like Frasier and Niles visiting Greece with their dad and with Daphne and everything, and just waxing poetic beforehand about like what a transformative experience it was going to be to stand where Plato had stood. And they get there and it's just like Starbucks's everywhere.
Yeah, and that's right.
And, that's basically Martin Heidegger.
He was there. He's like, the tourists insisted on taking photograph after photograph. Not experience. experiencing the reality only in a technologically mediated way. He was really, really pissed off that the Temple of Delphi was a was just a tourist trap.
It was a tourist trap, yeah.
And this, we related this to the, or I should say Matt, who wrote the script, related this to the to the theme of the song in Greece this year, which is very which is at pains to show a picture of Greece that is different from the kind of the you know statues and the sort of I don't know the School of Athens painting that you might come to mind when you think of ancient Greece and philosophy and stuff like that. At pains to like give the lie to that. To that picture. Yeah, so yeah,
to kind of show Athens as a tourist trap. And a lot of, and, you know, the way we got into it is like there was some serious controversy in Greece when this song was announced, especially when they showed the music video, which sort of shows Athens as being like overrun by it would be like if you did this video about like New York and it was basically just like footage of like, you know, sort of off-brand Elmos in Times Square just like mobbing the tourists, and it just made everything look tacky, right? It's like chintzy. It made it all, you know, it was just cheap souvenir shops and postcards. But of course, like, she has a real fondness for that like she feels like that's a fun, interesting side of Greece. And maybe there's like a generational divide that like the older people want Greece portrayed as like this place with this deep gravitas where like everybody is like a philosopher and an old soul, and she's just sort of like, no, like Greece is like a Disneyland.
If that's what you want, I refer if that was it, what anyone wants, if you want that, I refer you to Wedding, comma, My Big Fat Greek, which you can get all of that Helena Stan type of stuff. Matt, this has been a great year, and I'm glad you could come on and talk about the thing with us. Is there anything coming up that you want to tease for the interested viewer?
There may be. Should we give them a little bit of a taste?
A tiny taste.
If any of our viewers are puzzling, Clyde, if any of you have are on a first name basis, sorts. But we have, I don't know where this idea came from, but I think I suggested this like shortly after last year's Eurovision, which is like, what if we started hiding these like cryptic, almost like Da Vinci Code style riddles in the song reviews?
Matt, it started like a lot of your projects do with the question, what would be the maximum effort for the least reward? Yeah,
we'll make this even more complicated than it is right now.
Right, exactly.
That seems right, I guess.
I have, as a parent of three children, I have, if anything, too much sleep. And what could I do to take all of my sleep away for, you know, a period of 4 months at the beginning of 2024? And you can came up with something.
Yeah, so that if you start decoding these puzzles, and like, you know, we can give you a link to a couple of them to get you started. There are all sorts. This is great that like not only did Matt Rather spend many hours in front of the camera recording extremely long reviews. Our longest review this year is 48 minutes long of a single song. And so not only did he do this,
Taylor Swift.
He also spent hours recording videos that like only a small handful of people have even found. Because in order to find these videos, you need to uncover puzzles. And in some cases, you need to uncover a puzzle and then watch a video. And then in that video, there is a second puzzle that reveals a deeper, more secret video. But if you uncover all these puzzles, you will get... Can I say that this is some of the best acting I've seen you do in years?
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, drama school had nothing on this. Yeah, absolutely. I've definitely like made my neighbors stare at me running up and down the street with my phone, screaming vaguely comprehensible things into it about the band ABBA and artificial intelligence. And yeah, if that sounds interesting to you, you know, go save the cheerleader, save the world.
Good luck. It's not the last puzzle. I did not make it easy. But people have until Eurovision happens, anybody who can successfully crack the four passwords and submit them to a special website that I made Matt Rather build will have their name enshrined in like the Hall of Fame as like the saviors of the human race. We'll see who gets there.
Where can we watch Eurovision if one is inclined?
Eurovision is on Peacock this year. It's been on Peacock for a few years in a row. This year, they are not getting Johnny Weir to host it. It is unhosted, so it's going to play like without commentary, which really is an insult to us. I think. It's better. We'll just have it be silence. We'll just have it be dead air.
Yeah, to us specifically, as perhaps the foremost Eurovision fans YouTubing in America, right? Like, I can't think of anyone who's bigger than us for this extremely small demographic.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, thanks very much for coming to chat with us. I'm sure you got some videos to edit in the week before you go, so we'll let you go.
Might
now
have a couple surprises left up my sleeve, but it's good to see you guys.
Can't wait. Yeah, all right, thanks, Matt, and we'll be right back after this. So guys, now that Blinky's gone, let's talk about him behind his back. Yeah, that's a great idea. Oh my God. Oh, that guy is so brilliant, isn't he? And he's also, he just has a great smell, just a really, you know, friendly sort of smell, like a cigar bar or an old library.
He's kind of weirdly obsessed with Eurovision, right? Like, have we talked to him about that?
The first, among the first articles on Overthinking It were about Eurovision. So like from, 15, 16 years ago when we were starting this thing in 2008, right? He did, I think he wrote an article about the 2008 Eurovision back then. And that was back in the day, like YouTube was only a year old at that point. That was really, it was post Kazaa, post like Napster, but you know, still in the world where you had to do a little work to discover, to uncover niche interests, right? Now it's all on YouTube. You know, now it's all everywhere. It's just all on YouTube. Like everything you want is on YouTube. Oh, you know, you want the unreleased, you know, only exists in black and white footage of the, you know, alternate tragic ending to the Little Shop of Horrors film that they made of that musical. Yeah, it's on YouTube. You can totally find it on YouTube. Oh, you want like I don't know what
Star Wars Holiday Special.
There you go. Yes. Yeah exactly. Yeah, one thing that was once, you know, a pinnacle of like the collector's art. And we've talked about this before, and we actually, this was with the Stuart Lee Stuart Lee content provider, which we talked about on this show was about, right? And the way Stuart Lee put it with, you know, characteristic bombast, the character of Stuart Lee put it, played by the real Stuart Lee, the way that he put it was that like nothing you have ever felt in your pathetic, miserable lives, you know, is as profound as what it was like to get a grainy VHS tape of the Star Wars Holiday Special, a dub of a dub of a dub of a dub, generations beyond generations degraded, and to put it in and watch the crew go home for life day. But now it's all on YouTube. Now it's all on, and it's digitally upscaled to 4K. I don't know. I mean, YouTube is by leaps and bounds the most popular streaming service. And it's funny. It's never talked about when it's in the running of like kind of Netflix and Hulu and the all the ones that are, you know, competing in the sort of great entertainment single elimination semifinals that we've been having.
But it really should be, because it is huge competition for the likes of Disney.
So much more. I mean, it just gets so much more time and attention. I don't know what it is. I haven't seen the stats with revenue, like, and it's this ad model versus a subscription model. But like, yeah, man, it's wild, isn't it? It's like, it's, I mean, wild, and it's all there.
Minute video, right? Like tens of thousands of people are going to watch that instead of, you name it, right? Linear television, Netflix, Hulu, anything else, right? Like that's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, these are stats that I actually have on my phone, right? I can tell you that the watch time on our videos in the last 90 days is 66,297 hours, right? And we're nobody, like, right? Like that's not for a real YouTuber, for a YouTuber with an audience. The stats must be staggering, right? Eons of wasted potential, eons of person hours just flushed down the toilet, watching a voice teacher in Skokie, Critique, Leah Salonga singing I Dreamed a Dream, or she never played Cosette, did she? Leah Salonga singing, you know, that one about the river. The river's just a river, on my own. right? Like, and it's like, sorry. I can't. I'm amped up. I'm fired up. About.
Well, you're
this,
you're a YouTube celebrity now, Matt. Right? You've got all these people watching you. Are you going to start adopting a YouTube celebrity lifestyle?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go live in a house with all the other 20 somethings. Oh God! Imagine that. Imagine the shame of that, living in a house with the other 20 somethings, wondering if any of them put my toothbrush in their butt. The whole thing sounds for a cheap thrill on TikTok, right? Like, the whole thing sounds terrible. Though I hesitate to call myself a YouTube celebrity.
That's what your agent is for, right? Your publicist. Yeah,
I guess so. I mean, we've done okay. We'll I think exceed 500,000 views this year for our efforts this season across about a dozen main videos that we do, maybe 20. So, you know, it's incredible numbers, and the fact that, like, each of us kind of carries, you know, in your butt pocket a TV studio, which is more powerful than the equipment that brought us I Love Lucy, right? Like, it's amazing to contemplate. I don't know, we've talked about it before, but the kind of, like, the gravity of it, when you talk about it, I don't know, to a certain extent, I think it can't be kind of overstated. I feel a little weird about being a YouTube celebrity, because all I do is read what Matt writes, what Belinky writes, and that's not kind of the prevailing mode, right? Like, a lot of the stuff, like, you feel like it comes right from Mr. Beast's heart, you know. You feel like what he does, like, is what he really feels deep down in his beastly soul, and that's you know, and so our thing is maybe a little more, I don't know, a little more polished, like a little more presentational. But I also, like, our thing has never been a mass audience, and I don't think we would enjoy a mass audience, right? Because it's a real mo money, mo problems type of situation. Like, when you have to deal with kind of community management and, like, the toxicity of online communities and, like, the, all the kind of the stuff that comes along with it. And then when you sort of have to, in order to have growth, you have to, like, appeal to more and more mass tastes, right? Like, it does end up becoming kind of a slog. And I, rather than in the future being famous for 15 minutes, like Andy Warhol said, I'd rather be famous for 15 people, you know, provided that they were the right 15 people, right? Provided that they were 15 people I really respected. And that actually happened this year. We didn't talk about it with Belinky, but we published this sort of 50-minute video essay about the Eurovision entries of the Netherlands and the United Kingdom. The UK is not an enormous artistic success. It's by a well-known, you know, popular and, like, very winning and very good pop singer named Ollie Alexander. It's just that this one kind of, like, whiffs it. And compared it with, for a variety of reasons, compared it with the Netherlands entry this year, which is a sort of Eurodance song by a fella called Joost Klein. And he is, he's a dance music creator, but it doesn't really get at what he does. He does these, like, profoundly deep and in many cases, very, very sad, wrenchingly sad, driven by some, rough stuff that's happened to him in his own life, songs, but that are presented as sort of Eurodance tracks, and they are 100% bops. And until you like listen to the lyrics or, you know, read a translation of the lyrics in our case and like figure out what they're about. Anyway, like this is a person who I kind of over the course of shooting this video and like watching the music that he's made, I kind of came to respect. And then this artist, this pop singer actually found our video, watched the whole thing and commented on it on our channel. And I had the thought a little bit of, you know, the numbers are nice, like to see the hundreds of thousands or millions or something, like, you know, when we passed 2 million podcast downloads in the life of the show, that was a nice milestone. I like to see that success at scale happen, but it really didn't compare to the thought of like, oh, that guy knows who I am. You know, and I respect that guy. Like, I respect the heck out of that guy. And that's very cool. Right. And it's, I don't know, it's a different model of, celebrity. Like, Mark or Pete, I'm sure you've done a show. Like, Mark, have you ever done a music show and like someone whose music you liked was in the audience somehow and like said something nice to you? Or, you know, can you relate to what I'm talking about?
Not in a specific way, but yeah, I guess. Well, let me answer that with a different question though. I was like, I thought we were going with that. It was like somebody like you know, out on the street in Los Angeles, like recognize you for the YouTube channel. Has that happened to you yet?
No, it's never. I mean, and it won't. Like, the no one watches the YouTube channel in Los Angeles. I mean, I did a Modern Family and no one recognizes me. You know what I mean? Like, I was on the most popular show on television at one point, and like, I don't get that. I also just have one of those faces. All bald white guys with a beard look the same.
Like the Hot Ones guy?
Yeah, exactly. We look exactly like the Hot Ones guy.
I used to get recognized from the podcast sometimes. I'm a little bit surprised you haven't been recognized. I'd be at like a random party and someone would say that they listened to Overthinking It and they like recognized my name or something like that.
Yeah, but you're
a smaller city.
Yeah, and you were in kind of a community, right? Like,
yeah.
Of people who were like into listening to each other's podcasts.
That's true. I mean, I will say, I mean, the nicest thing that anybody major said about me was I did guest on, I performed on Las Culturistas, the Bo and Yang podcast, and he did call me masterful, which was a nice thing to have him say.
Really? That's great.
When did that happen? Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it happened before COVID because it was a live show. He did a live show in Boston. There was kind of a call out to performers who wanted to come in. And it was his bit. I was at I'm So Sorry, Honey, I think it's called. Which was like you had to do a monologue about something that you were basically just done with, right? Like you were done with. And the way that it worked is he had a whole bunch of them in a bucket. And so you would get one out of the bucket, and then you would have to give a monologue to this crowd, this packed crowd at this bar, about why you thought this thing was bad. I was pretty lucky. I pulled intermittent fasting, and I just went off. I really like geared up for it too. Like, one of the things as a performer of comedy I always wanted to do is dress up more, and people have always shamed me for it, so I didn't do it. So like, and by dress up, I don't mean like dress nice. I mean like dress in a silly manner that has some sort of distinctiveness to it. And so
that's a high risk, high reward maneuver though, right? Like, because you could easily become fedora guy. Like, every college has a fedora guy, you know?
Oh yeah, but I wasn't going to wear a fedora.
Well, okay, yeah, but you but know no, what I mean.
Exactly. Like, totally. For this show, I wore a camel jacket, like a camel hair jacket that my dad had got me with a purple tie. And I kept telling everybody that I was dad on Easter. Was the vibe I was trying to serve up. And I was probably like, you know, 6 or 7 years on average older than everybody else was there. But yeah, so I went up there and did my rant about intermittent fasting, and it got a big round of applause, and Bo and Yang called me masterful, and then I went and sit down again. And it was really nice, you know, like it was nice to feel validated in that way. And so, you know, it's you don't get that.
That's a really really specific compliment as well, right? Like, it's not like, oh, hey, good job, buddy, or that was great, or something like that. That's a
I've got my thing. This is extremely low stakes and nothing really compared to Pete. But remember when I was talking about the Disney cruise?
Yes.
And I don't know if I talked about like me doing karaoke at the Disney Cruise and just freaking killing it as I want to do.
I believe you did.
But I had a little bit of stage banter as well, and I was going back and forth with the KJ, with the karaoke, you know, the host, and he complimented me for that. And that felt like a real accomplishment that, you know, a professional, chose to go out of his way to say that, not only can this guy sing, he's also got,
what was your banter? Like, what did you talk to the KJ about?
It was a very specific thing. I mentioned I was going to sing a song from Oasis, apologies to the real Brit, because the KJ was a British man. And my zinger was that, well, we're all here in a Disney cruise. I think we can all appreciate the desire to just keep reliving the 90s. So I'm going to sing an Oasis song. That was my zinger. Not bad, right? Not bad.
That's good. And then it killed me. But that, you know, that thing of like, I don't know, I guess if you're making your living from it, I guess you want as big an audience as possible so that they all, you know, pay you money and you can pay your mortgage and stuff like that. I don't know. It almost feels better to just have not to be a scene policeman or something, or like, you know, but like to have the right people, not the in crowd. I don't mean that. I'm not trying to like outgroup anybody, but like to have people whom you respect, people whose accomplishments you respect, say something appreciative about what you've done. And like, to the extent that we've become kind of a medium-sized fish in this very, very specific, this extraordinarily tiny pond. It's
not
is
that
nice
tiny, though. Like, freaking Eurovision's huge, and like Eurovision YouTube has got to be like, you know.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's okay, but like, like Hans reacts to Estonia's latest entry, right? Gets like 1.5 million views in 20 minutes. And we're scraping them out click by click, though, you know, they aggregate into something pretty, pretty decent by the end of the season. But like, you know, yeah, and Americans, being an American also kind of gives us a unique point of view. And we joke about it all the time about how I can't pronounce the names, or about how we're sort of very self-regarding and obsessed, right? Like, though, you know, I don't know, if you're in Paris and you, it's like, you know, hey, fly 1500 miles, you know, here that would be from me to like St. Louis, right? Like, in Paris, you fly 1500 miles, you're in what? You're in like Moscow, you know, you could be in a different continent. So, yeah, it's a, I guess a culture in Europe is a sort of a different thing. And we're always commenting from outside of it is what I mean to say.
My point being is that you and Matt should not undersell the accomplishment. It's like, it's on one hand, it's surprising. On the other hand, it's kind of not, because like we have been grinding away at our various creative projects and putting our unique voice out into the world. And frankly, you know, we achieved scale, you know, several times over, right? In the different modalities like you described before. And so here's the next one. And yeah, I suspect it won't be the last.
It's funny. I mean, yeah, it is funny. Like, we have a kind of an internal ritual when something we do hits big. Pete, can you describe what you do on Slack when something happens? That's good.
I just type in all caps, "We have arrived."
Yes.
It used to happen a lot more often than it does these days. Perhaps just because people just in general went more places. So we arrived more frequently.
we were also younger men, Pete, at the time. And so arriving more frequently was to be expected.
I'm as good once as I ever was, right? It's, talk about folk music.
But that's interesting. That's an interesting phenomenon, right? Like, because in a way, not in a Finzelian way, in an actual way, the number of things, the number of weird subgenres and things like this is interesting. It has expanded, has proliferated, has exploded, really. The number of channels has sort of shrunk, hasn't it? Because it's like, it's mostly TikTok, a little bit Instagram Reels, and, you know, that's kind of it for, and maybe YouTube, like, as sources of things going really big. Like, things don't really go big on Twitter since it became X. Things don't go really big on Facebook anymore. At least I'm not a, you know, I don't know. I'll tell you what
goes big on Facebook nowadays is AI generated art that is just like being churned out by a spam bot.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. and everybody's grandma is like, you know, oh, what a beautiful baby picture. And it's like, it's made by a computer. It's not anybody's baby. But the, you know, there's been this kind of shrinking. Like in the past, we could arrive, we did like homepage of Slashdot a couple of times, not Slashdot. Yeah. Slashdot, a couple of times.
Reddit.
Yeah. But then there was also Dig. There was also Reddit as a, you know, kind of in its earlier incarnations, right? Yeah. And like Dig was a big deal. We got StumbleUpon, a couple of times. We got, you know, big on StumbleUpon, where certain things just like made their algorithm happy and we were represented a lot. And it's, I don't know, it's interesting that the, unless you kind of have a thing, like I'm thinking about actually our strategy for short form content this last week before Eurovision for our, you know, 20 to 50 minute long YouTube videos, and like, what, how can I carve this up, right? Like, how can I carve this up into 45 to 60 second clips, which are really the only way, the kind of the advertisement, kind of the trailer of what we're doing, so that you know, people on the various social platforms can interact with what we're doing. And the answer, of course, is AI, right? Like, there are websites where you can like put in the thing, the URL of your YouTube video, and it will ingest the whole thing and like chop it up into algorithmically fine-tuned clips that are, you know, meant to get a whole bunch of engagement. I don't know. It's a, you know, I don't know. We no longer live in the golden age of television or of anything else. I don't know. Let's invent some YouTube channels. You know, let's invent some YouTube channels. Like, if you could start a YouTube channel, you know, with a very specific niche interest, you know, what would you like to do? I don't know. Pete, do you have a YouTube channel you'd like to start?
Oh man. Well, I did at one point I didn't start a channel, but I did at one point potentially get into the business of helping make college application athletics highlight videos. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. I did it as a favor to somebody, but they ended up paying me for it anyway to their kids. So I guess that was something that I considered, like, well, I could make a little bit of extra money on the side helping like cut together, you know, high schoolers highlight reels from, so that they could send it to colleges for like sports recruitment. And it's not really like my thing, but it was something I could have. That'd be one that I would be most likely to try to
find. Were you successful? Was the
oh,
young
yeah,
person
of course.
Offered?
It was a great video.
Yeah.
Yeah. Full ride. They actually are president of the United States now. It was amazing. no, I have no idea what happened. I don't think they got into college and they're happy.
You gotta track really your follow. You gotta track your hit rate with something.
I know,
like that,
I didn't really do a lot of metrics on it. I would say that right now, I mean, my favorite YouTube channel that's like this is a guy who did Magic the Gathering commentary for a long time, who spun off and did a side channel about one of his side interests that became tremendously much more popular than his Magic the Gathering content, is this guy, Marshall Sutcliffe, who has a channel called Wristwatch Revival, where he repairs old watches. That's not in my bag. I couldn't do that. I just don't have the dexterity. But he's really hit a niche with that, and the videos are really good. And you get in all the years of practice he has making videos for other purposes serve him well in doing it. If I were to do it now and make a YouTube channel, I think the thing that would be most interesting would be my journey to try to get the various like other life on my property under some measure of proper control
yes,
and management.
Yes, it's called Pete versus Nature.
Yes, yes, yes. And so it started out with, like, how do you bundle sticks? You keep trying to take this twine to tie up these bundles of sticks, and they never take them because they aren't the right size or they're not tied well enough, right? And it would be like, okay, let's explore the different knots that we could use or the different methods to, like, bundle these sticks. And every, like, 5 seconds, I would have to pull another, you know, sprig of wild garlic up out of the ground and be like, oh, freaking get this stuff out of here.
You see? And, like, that's perfect. I am here for that content. I would watch the hell out of Pete versus Nature. And you know what? I'd probably then, like, when I couldn't sleep, I'd probably, like, put them on in my headphones just to, like, you know, have some, like the rustling of grass and the, you know, the
babbling brook in the backyard as well.
The babbling brook, right?
Hard to set up the camera. Hard to set up the camera. I could give it a shot. Sound would be tough, but maybe I could do something like that. That would be pretty fun.
Mark, what do you have as your television channel, as your, you know, YouTube, your YouTube cable channel?
Oh, I was thinking some, like, extremely hyper local, like, not civic engagement, but, like, kind of like streetscape, city infrastructure, you know, public sector interaction with the private realm kind of thing, like, just like documenting like various transgressions, like delivery bicyclists riding on the sidewalk,
yes,
and cops parking their private vehicles and pedestrian crosswalks, and flooding from a construction site that has, you know, blocked off the drainage and things like that, and just like going to weird tangents and deep dives about what city agency controls this, that, the other, and why we can't have nice things. It'd be a real downer. I think I would rather watch Pete versus Nature, which I am told has a very uplifting theme, and Pete wins, yes, against Nature at the end. Is that right, Pete?
No, Nature is red in tooth and claw and unforgiving. It ends with me being stomped on by a fisher cat.
No!
Get out of me, fisher cat! What are you doing? You're not a fisher. You're not a cat. Get out of here!
It's like Grizzly Man. It's like the worst outcome, yeah, of the bear or man meme. Yeah. You know, it's the, you know, oh, Pete versus, yeah, Nature. I love it. I too, Mark, want to use mine for revenge. I'd like to. To
that's
invest-
not what I was saying, but yeah, sure,
I'd like
ahead
to
go
use
first.
Investigate and find the people who walk their dogs on the No Dogs Allowed hiking trail that I do trail runs on early on Saturday mornings. You know, sometimes causing me or a friend of mine to, like, you know, trip and fall and nearly, like, break a leg on the ground. I'd like to record these people's faces and their dogs, and then I'd like to, like, you know, dox and shame them, maybe get them fired from their job, like make them the main character of the internet for a day or two, right? Like, you know, and it's some variation on, like, no bad dogs, only bad owners, you know, and that's how I will clean up my little part of the civic infrastructure. But then I don't know, like, since someone's going to want to make an app, and then people are going to want to, like, crowdsource recommendations, and then pretty much it's going to be like Citizen or Nextdoor or something like that, where it's like, oh, I've seen a black person in my neighborhood, let's put out an alert. There's,
let's not do that.
Yeah, nothing
on thought,
yeah,
on second thought, let's just say whatever Matt Belinky writes for us.
Right. Let's stick with the podcast. It's a lot more personable, right? Like, we can be a lot more open-hearted than you know, I don't know, being eaten by a mountain cat or flooded out by a construction project or tripped and fall down and break a rib and puncture a lung and die on the rocky trail from some irresponsible dog owner who shouldn't be there in the first place. Let's stay with the podcast because it's so much more fun, and we love doing it, and we love the people who listen to it. So thank you for listening to it. Thanks, Pete and Mark, for podcasting. Thanks in absentia to Belinky, who came in and shared some enthusiasm and excitement. We're overthinking it on YouTube. If you search for Overthinking It on YouTube, you will get Willow Smith's song Overthinking It. But if you search for Overthinking It Eurovision on YouTube, you'll find us there. Eurovision itself is on Peacock this weekend. It's weird and wonderful, and I highly encourage you to give it a shot. We'll be back next week with more Overthinking Eurovision. Until then, you can visit us on the web at overthinkingit.com, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny
it probably doesn't deserve.